Welcome to the Reflecting on a Decade of Building State Capability podcast series. On today's podcast, I have with me Kirk Gibson. We met Kirk for the first time in September 2018 when he and a group from Papua New Guinea took our free PDIA online course. Welcome, Kirk.
Thanks, Salima. Great to have a chat.
Great. So why don't we start with that first experience? You know, this was our flagship free PDIA online course, and this was the practice of PDIA, the group course where you had a group and a problem, and you took this course with us. Why don't you share with us, how did you find out about this course, and what was that experience like?
Sure. So in 2018, I was working for The Voice, Inc., and we had been exploring the idea of taking individual forms of leadership up to ideas of collective leadership or developmental leadership. We were starting to explore these ideas, and we together worked on forming the first youth coalition in PNG. So we brought together around 25 organizations to see whether they're interested in collective action on specific issues, and then started to take action on fitting Youth Voice into a couple of law reforms that were going on at the time. And during this time, we got information from our friends at La Trobe University's Institute of Human Security and Social Change, Chris Roach and crew, about PDIA as a way to perhaps take some of the Youth Coalition's energy and help understand the problems they were dealing with and target them. So, yeah, we found out about the course. We put it out to the Youth Coalition to see if members of that wanted to form a team to go more deeply into some of the issues we were talking about. And yeah, we've got about 7-8 of them signed up and we got into it.
So you participated in this 16-week course, and that's a long time period to be able to stay engaged, even though it's free. Can you share a little bit about that experience of what motivated you to stay through to the end?
Yeah, I think, you know, it was an exciting time for The Voice and this group of youth organizations. It was the first time we'd come together in a coalition, and the energy in the organizations was incredible. I remember we had our first meeting, and on day one, 22 organizations turned up, and on day two, 25 organizations turned up. And we're like, wow, I've never been to a workshop where more organizations turned up on day two. So there was this palpable energy. And so when we started PDIA, that energy maintained, and those people who were representing their organizations just kept turning up and kept engaging in the work. So for us, The Voice, myself included, we were sort of acting as facilitator for that group and providing a space for them to meet. So I think we were drawn along by the energy of them. And so we had to see it through, really, because we were supporting that group to see it through.
And then the course ended in December 2018. And what happened after that?
Well, I guess what happened during the course as well was that the group took on this idea of feeding into two law reforms that were happening at the moment, feeding Youth Voice into two law reforms, and this incredible effort. They mobilized all their different organizations across the country and got 1,000 youth responses into a law reform process. You know, other government bodies have been trying to get Voice into this reform process for a long time. And in 24 days, they got 915 responses across 12 provinces from young people into drug and alcohol reform. And so it was an incredibly exciting time, sort of realizing the power, and all that was done with no extra resources, with no money at all. It was just through mobilizing different people and what they already had, which is very much in the PDIA vein of thinking. So I think what happened during the course was that people felt a real energy for what was possible when we worked together this way. And then afterwards, I left PNG the next year, but The Voice continued on supporting that youth coalition and trying to do other action. But for myself, I mean, if I was to continue my story, so I then went to Timor-Leste and I was heading up a workforce development program, which was working to support the Timor-Leste government on youth unemployment and employment, and then pathways into employment like training and skills development. And been doing that for about a year. And then one of the newly created government agencies, which was tasked with implementing a national employment strategy, some highly ambitious employment strategy to create, you know, 60,000 jobs in 5 years. We were starting to talk to them and they didn't really know where to start. And the government had put this huge priority on employment. You had this massive youth bulge of young people coming through in this very young country, only been a new nation for about 20 years. And we started working with this agency and they said, well, where can we start? How do we even understand this problem? How do we unpack it? And so I thought, oh, well, actually, I remember I took this PDIA course and our friends at Building State Capability. So we introduced some of the concepts to them and they loved it. And so then over the next 3 months, we worked with them in a sort of train the trainer model where we customize the resources that are in the PDIA self-help toolkit, I think it's called, and broke them down to Timor-Leste context level. And this team from the National Employment Strategy Secretariat learned how to deliver some of the first stages of PDIA and then went out there to a range of communities and did sessions with stakeholders around employment using particularly problem construction, problem deconstruction, and then identifying access points, and found that that was an incredibly useful tool for them to bring people around a problem and understanding how they could take action. So they embraced that tool in a way that really exceeded our expectations. And then at the end, we just stepped back and they're still today, I think, using at least some parts of PDIA as a way to bring together people around understanding the problem of employment and really where to take action on such a massive problem that has so many elements in Timor-Leste.
That's a really impressive story. How long were you there?
I was there about 3 years and we worked with this government agency for probably about a year on this. And it was funny at the time, I remember I was like, should I be talking to Salima and Matt about this before we start using some of these tools? But, and then I was like reading the thing and it's like Creative Commons. No, you know, we support the idea of getting things out there, particularly for people in developing countries to use some of those tools. So I felt comfortable that you would support the feeling behind that sharing of those resources.
Absolutely. And in fact, I think through this podcast series, I'm hearing a variety of stories that are like yours that I was not aware of that just give me a lot of joy. When we developed the toolkit, the idea really was to be able to put these tools in the hands of the people that needed it the most and make it simple. And it's been one of the reasons why we actually have actively translated the toolkit. Granted, we have 6 languages right now, not 100 languages. But it has been the motivation is to be able to give people tools in a language that understands and contextualize also the translation in a way that would make sense in that particular language. So it really is incredible to hear that.
Yeah. And I think on that note, you will now find that you might go to a small town, you know, on an island off Timor-Leste in Ata Uro, and you would potentially come across some PDIA resources in Tetum, which is the national language of Timor-Leste, because, yeah, those resources were translated into Tetum when they were being used by this government agency. And they found it was a really effective way, a very practical way of breaking down a problem that people just really didn't know where to start on, youth unemployment in Timor-Leste. And so particularly the problem construction and deconstruction with the fishbone was a great way of bringing a whole lot of different stakeholders who were acting on the problem in different ways together into sort of shared understanding of where they were contributing.
And I think the fact that it continued even after you left is a real testament to kind of the capability that you built yourself while you were there in the 3 years.
Yeah. And I mean, hats off to my Timor-Leste team who were the geniuses in the training. And my Tetum was pretty basic, but we had incredible buy-in from these government leaders really in their agency. And that was critical. They were looking for a way and they latched on to this as a way that really served their need to try and attack the problem.
So then you leave Timor-Leste and where do you go after that?
So then at the end of Timor-Leste, I get a phone call from my friends. Well, I wasn't even at the end. I was still over there from my friends at the Voice Inc. saying that they've been working on this huge new program called Local Leadership and Collective Action. And they've received this large amount of funding and that they need to now stand up this program, this highly ambitious program, which would see them really scaling up their organization and this collective action part of their work, developmental leadership and collective action and coalition building. And would I be interested in coming to join them again as we try to set it up and roll it out? And at the end of Timor-Leste, I said, yeah, I would love to. The Voice is a unique organization that carry a lot of passion and a lot of learnings from myself during my time working for them. So I was happy to be back with them. And then starting mid-2022, we started to roll out the program. And the first bit was the first PDIA course with the 32 leaders from the Voices network from around the country who were already working on issues. So we had to pull together that program and get it up and going in a pretty short time, and, you know, including with you guys. And somehow I think we pulled it off pretty well. And those people are all out there. That first group had a really good experience and are all out there using some of those PDIA tools in different ways. Although I think we're still working out how exactly that network comes together and what, you know, parts of PDIA and training and how can we sort of keep some of that going for them.
So we reconnected again, like you mentioned, in 2022, and I was pleasantly surprised and very happy to get that first email from you and Molly about, hey, would you be interested in this, in doing a PDIA training for The Voice as part of this program? What motivated you to, so, you know, you come back to work for The Voice. They have this new program on local leadership. How did PDIA come into this? How did you think about, hey, let's come back to building stick capability and think about what we can do with them?
Yeah, I think this story is more Amali and Serena's because they made an initial contact with you. But when they talked to me, they pitched the idea and what had happened and to test, you know, what was my thoughts on the logic of how PDIA fitted with the rollout of local leadership and collective action. And essentially they were saying they needed a tool to try and support the emergence of coalitions in PNG, which had been a difficult space. Some coalitions had started, but had been difficult to maintain. There was some challenges around trust, around different groups of actors coming together in a way that was able to maintain itself through to public policy reform or implementation. And I think Serena and Molly originally pitched to you guys and got you excited about it. So I think I wasn't involved in that initial decision to choose PDIA, but for me, the logic made great sense because we needed a way to attract and engage different sorts of leaders into something new and practical that wasn't just another training. It wasn't just another talk fest or forum. It needed to say, well, what is the problem in your space? You bring that problem to the table and then let's start working on it now. And I think that logic really made sense to me in PNG, where there's just lots and lots of talking, lots and lots of plans that already exist. And then there are people who are desperate to start working on things and want to. So that's, for me, is one of the key differences and why we hope that it may work in a different sort of way in PNG to get momentum on these quite intractable problems or previously intractable problems.
So when you think about that first cohort, right? So we are now in the second year of this program that we are working together, but we didn't think about it as a two-year program. We started with 1 year doing a pilot, which we did from September to December 2022, and 31 development leaders from Papua New Guinea successfully completed the program and, as you say, are now out there. Can you say a little bit about what they've been doing? Because we finished the course in December, and then I think it was in March where you came back to us this year in 2023 saying, can we do a second cohort and can we think about what that would look like? But in that time period, what was the group that we had trained doing with the training that they had received?
So there's a couple of different ways that those groups have traveled. So what we first imagined with PDIA in the logic of local leadership, you know, and PDIA makes up one part of a sort of broader suite of resources and mechanisms by which we're trying to support these leaders to take action. But what we thought was that, okay, a PDIA group will dig into an issue, they'll come up with actions, and then those actions will continue after PDIA. Perhaps they'll gather a larger group of people around them that will form into a coalition that will then get some traction on the issue they're working on. So that sort of happened, but in a bit of a different way than we thought. So probably some of the most interesting examples are when the first group from PDIA dug into the issue, identified some access points. So sorcery accusation related violence is one example. Access to justice was the point that they were digging into the problem. That group of people have then engaged with other groups of developmental leaders and organized a team that then enrolled in PDIA too. And that second team is made up of highly influential and key network leaders who are actually in a better position probably than PDIA. So PDIA team one starts as one of, as a coach from that team on the second team. So they've sort of seen a cumulative effect on some of the issues where we've got a team in PDIA two who are better placed. And also that issue that they've identified or the access point is narrower and more realistic as a reform issue. So that's happened in probably two cases. The other one is on youth employment, where we now have a team that is much more focused on a specific national policy issue and has a real chance of progressing that one, being coached by PDIA one person, found the access point, got the right leaders in PDIA two. And I think the other interesting way that we've done some follow-up and feedback with PDIA one is some of them are just using it individually in their own organizations, sort of habitually in their daily work. So some of our higher education team are simply using the tools to deal with day-to-day problems in the operations of their universities. So these are university leaders or senior university people, and using it to bring people together around problems and identifying how to solve them. And particularly stuff around authorizers, that's been really powerful for PDIA one group, is then understanding, well, how do we make change happen, or why isn't it happening? Right, the authorizing space, we don't have the right people on board. So I think all these bits of the tools they're then using just to solve problems at various levels in their daily work.
And with like this second cohort, you know, they're in week 9 of the program. What do you hope to see from this cohort? You know, I think like you explained, we trained the first cohort last year. Some of the members of that cohort are now serving as coaches in teams for the second year of training. What are some thoughts that you have or hopes that you have for what they may do with this?
I think the second team, and you know, we try not to be too ambitious, because in PNG, things take time. In all countries, things take time when you're trying to budge really complex issues. But what we think is the way PDIA 2 teams came together, they came together as a team. They were already working together in some way. So they had a bit of a jumpstart. PDIA 1 came together from different spaces. So PDIA 2 teams potentially working already within a single organization or within a networked group that is acting on a problem. So they tend to be a bit further progressed into the problem, into solving things in their daily work. So for a couple of them, yeah, we are a little bit more optimistic about what they might be able to accomplish. So we're now starting to get into this more clearly identifying a reform issue and starting to see a couple of them bring together people outside the PDIA group to solve that issue. So this sort of emergent coalitions, probably in a couple of spaces, and they're really using the PDIA tools to say, okay, who are the authorizers for the specific problem we want? How do we bring them together? And so we're starting to see the shape of a coalition in two cases that might be able to take on, in one case, it would be the implementation of a national plan that's been very hard to implement. And in the other case, it's the possible reform of some really outdated laws around a certain type of alcohol that is causing a lot of harm in some of the capital cities. So I think there's a couple of emergent mini coalitions, but also narrower reform issues that are viable really for that group to take forward.
And finally, what advice would you give to other people who are either interested in PDIA or are already doing PDIA work?
Sure. And, you know, I think it's not like I've drunk the Kool-Aid or anything on PDIA. There are many tools and mechanisms that we use, and, you know, each can work in different situations. But what I've found is there are some parts of PDIA that are extremely practical for people that I work with, both in developing countries and in other places, that simply work, that allow them to unpack a problem in a way that makes them feel confident and able to take action. And so I would say to anyone thinking about it is that, yeah, it's not the single tool, it's not the be all and end all. There are many different ways, but in certain situations, and what I've found is you've got a very complex problem. When you've got a large amount of people trying to take on that complex problem, PDIA tools can give you a very practical way of breaking it down to a starting point, which actually allows momentum to then develop. And then from there, who can say? But it's that first paralysis point that I find can really just stop things happening for a very long time, sometimes in places that I've worked in.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Kirk. This has been a real delight.
Good to chat, Salima. Talk to you again soon.
Thank you for listening to our podcast today. If you liked it, please check out our website, bsc.hks.harvard.edu, or follow us on social media at Harvard BSC. You can also find links and other information under the description of this podcast.